Blog Talk Radio.
I don't hear anything.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is the Ask Tall Paul radio show. This is Tall Paul. And today we're going to be talking about the 12 permaculture principles. And Joey is having technical difficulties. He says he can't hear anything. We can hear him, though. So I don't know what to say about that. Joey, can you hear us?
Oh, no.
Joey.
I don't know. I can't hear anything.
Can you... Oh, man. Okay. Come on over. If everyone, you could please hold. Hopefully he's just going to come on over. He's in the other building. There's 12 permaculture principles. Just a minute. I'm going to call him. This is hilariously funny.
So we get...
Very funny, everyone, because he doesn't know that we can hear him.
We're not, like, testing out Skype or testing anything, just throwing the computers on and thinking they're going to work.
I'm calling him. My goodness. Never heard anything like it.
I didn't even send my message.
There we go. Okay. So, I hope everyone can hear. Let's go back to the studio. This, again, is a technical difficulty. So today we're talking about the 12 permaculture principles. Last week we mentioned talked about the three permaculture ethics, which are care for the earth, care for people, and return of surplus. Another way of saying that is fair share, or share of the surplus. And with the 12 permaculture principles, again, our goal is to start building an awareness as we're using these design principles to develop our properties and to look at how we're going to incorporate the different elements within permaculture. So, Joey, thank you for coming.
Well, it looks like I had to, since I wasn't maybe following one of the principles of permaculture.
Which is what?
Maybe let's think about it. Which one could it have been? I observed that we had a time to be on the program.
And you were on.
And I was on time, but I don't think.
Could you ever hear me?
I couldn't hear you.
I could always hear you.
Well, and I couldn't even hear you through the speaker just of my computer with my headphones unplugged.
Yeah, so it was a little technical issue.
Something going on there. So I think maybe when you're... This is a big point in permaculture design, and this to me shows... And the ethics, these 12 principles, are part of how we design these permaculture systems, how we design permaculturally, and it even applies... to this show.
Yes.
Where there would have been a nice way to prepare and make sure that the audio worked on the computer. It worked fine last time on both of all the same devices, the same headphones and mics and everything. All the thing was the same, but we still didn't go through any process to see if everything was still working the same.
We did. I mean, I did. But on the other side, your side of the input, so like when you're designing your system, like, you can't always prepare for a tornado. It just might come out of the blue. So, on my end, I was attempting to communicate with Joey, and I called him twice because I could hear him say, I can't hear. And I called him twice, but his phone, I guess, wasn't with him. So, anyway,
Well, so that's fun stuff. I like when it really applies right down to
it really does
to real life.
All right.
And so when we look at these 12 principles now, when you look at Bill Mollison and David Holmgren, who are the originators of permaculture, Bill Mollison was like the mentor figure of David. David was like Bill's student, and they worked together for David's, I think, thesis to come up with the permaculture concept. And Bill, in the permaculture design manual, doesn't have these 12 principles laid out in the fashion that we're going to go over with them, over them briefly in this show. But what happened is David went his way and Bill went his way, and David developed more of a system that's a bit easier to read and apply in a different sense. Everybody, that's the beauty of permaculture. Everybody can synthesize the different, take the three ethics and bring them off into very creative ways for all of us to understand, because we all understand things in a different way. And we compute things in our brains a different way, and we look at things differently. And in this methodology here of the 12 principles, you know, it starts out with the three ethics, like Paul was saying, and then David branches it off into these 12 definitive kind of principles.
Well, before we go any further, in the episode description here of that you're looking at, if you could click on the link to the 12 permaculture principles, you'll see a graphic, and this will help you as we discuss it, so you can see what we're looking at, and it's a good reference for you. All right, so.
Well, and when you do click through and you look at that, you'll see what David had in mind. And David had in mind to create symbols and things that pertain and try to interlink things to these things together to make them more of a more visual and easier to conceptualize. So we're going to go with them, and we're going to start. When we start with one, the first principle is observe and interact. So, I mean, when you can see, pay attention. And when we're designing, when we're looking at designing, whether it's your garden, whether it's your food forest, if anybody knows what has heard about that, food forestry. When you're going to design your house, when you're going to design the way the driveway goes to your house, if you're designing a new house, or you're picking a house to live at, designing how your business model is set up for the way your business runs. You start to observe things. I guess that could even apply to I'm just doing this for fun, but apply it to a retail location. You do that too. You observe where people go, people walk, where it's more, you'll get more traffic.
Well, like I had heard Starbucks, whenever they put in a location, they will never put a location where it requires a left turn to get into the center. It's always the right turn traffic they're looking for.
Ah.
So when you're on your property, they always say one of the first things you should look at is, where is the sun coming from? Where does it rise? Where does it set? Where does the wind come from? Are there any structures nearby that might be preventing, the blockage of the sun, fences, trees, things like that.
Right. And you're observing those. And then how do those observations of the sun, of the wind, or of the noise from the road, how do those interact with you or with all the different elements or your house? How do those, you've observed them, how do they interact now? Even if it's people, you've observed people coming around or people that are in your life, and how do things interact? And when we're talking about natural systems, if we're going with the idea of creating these, mimicking natural systems and the way that they operate and the patterns that exist in nature, and implementing those in our lives and in our designing of landscapes, the idea is to create diversity, and diversity is created in how things interact, because it's just a beautiful thing. And when you observe it, and then you look to add them all in and try to get them all to interact in a positive way, then whatever it may be, you're paying attention to that first principle. I think we go to the second principle, because this is the beauty of when David thought these things out, because just like the ethics form a basic kind of cyclic pattern where they go back and they each feed and work with each other. These principles, you're observing and interacting, you're paying attention. Well, now you've observed energies, the sun, for instance, how it moves in on a property or wherever you're living, even if in an apartment, or you're choosing an apartment to live in. How do you catch and store energy? If you're talking about harvesting when it's abundant, so you have to observe in order to harvest while things are abundant. And to catch and store energy, you need to observe energy.
Well, it's not just thinking about electricity, but one example is Joey last year, he knew it was going to rain. So he got out there and he spread all these seeds because the timing was a good part of it. And rather than have to water the seeds in, he's observed that, okay, the weather's about to change and we need to use this natural harmony, the natural system of the weather to water those seeds. And he did it right in time and it's completely worked out. So it's pretty cool. It says harvest it while it's abundant. Here's this abundance of rain coming.
Right.
What are you going to do with it? Because he collects water from his roof. There's just different ways he collects water. But out there's a swale. But the part that where he put these cover crop was beyond the swale. He had mulch there, which is another way to harvest water. But the other way is to actually use that energy in the water was to put those seeds out just in time, and it worked out, didn't it?
It worked out well, and that's that harvesting, like Paul said, that harvesting of the rain. Now you work into the when you're obtaining a yield. We're at the third principle, and you're making sure you're getting valuable results. What is that?
Yeah, so you're putting all this effort in, and if you're putting effort and effort and effort and you're getting nothing out of it, then should you keep doing that?
I don't know. It sounds like some relationships I had when I was young.
Oh, and how did those work out for you?
Well, they didn't, and then I finally found somebody nice that like my wife, we've been married now for 11 years.
Awesome.
Got 3 kids. So I think I observed and I caught her. So, and then I obtained a yield and we have children now.
With abundance.
Some abundance.
Well, also obtaining this yield. So just because you're doing things and you're making a mistake, that doesn't mean it's bad. Making mistakes are actually good. And you learn from your mistakes.
It's true.
And so, but if you keep making the same mistake over and over, over again, you're going to want to make sure that, all right, if you're no longer learning from it, it's time to cut that. That method is no longer good. If you've tweaked it and it's still not working, then just kind of think out of the box and go. So I'm going to read this chart because Joey doesn't have his glasses. So the next one is self-regulate, accept feedback. So you should be open to modify dysfunctional behaviors.
Oh, gosh.
If you're on a team of people, like if you're all by yourself, this one's kind of hard to do because you might not have any feedback. But usually you're in permaculture, part of it is working with people and I think that it's important to kind of get feedback and tailor your things and be willing to accept criticism if it's warranted. Like, one of the things that I know I saw once, someone was like trying to measure everything so perfectly in this garden. And I'm like, you know what? When we look at permaculture, we're trying to mimic nature. And nature isn't exactly, I mean, there's definitely a science behind the way nature works. But nature doesn't go out and use a ruler to plant how many inches to plant two trees apart from each other and stuff like that. So, I mean, you can do that. There's nothing wrong with it. But ultimately, nature is going to take its course.
And well, and I think when we talk about nature, we're talking about people and how they interact and how it's natural. And for him right now, it's natural to measure. But for there was other people there. And that's not what's natural for us. And in that circumstance, and when I think about it, there's a balance that needs to be in place there. When I was looking at how to accept the feedback and respond to it, and so we could all get a little bit out of the event, that everybody gets something that's satisfying their nature as it is right at that moment. Ideally, it could be many different ways, but that's the beauty of self-regulating and accepting feedback. And this applies not just to people, but we think about it a lot in dysfunctional behavior, because that's a lot of what I have is dysfunctional behavior. But accepting feedback is also accepting feedback from the environment, from the plant. From the, something you try to do, and you go back to the first principle and you start to observe something you've done, and then now you need to not reject the feedback. Open up to why that plant's not doing good. Oh, wait. Oh, I think that the plant's not doing good, and now you're...
Yeah. But here's an example. Like, I, at my house, I used to have these citrus trees, and they were always yellow. And one of the signs of yellowing leaves is an iron deficiency. So I tried to do something with supplements to do the iron. And they're like, no, that's not doing it. It just didn't work. And I live in Southern California, and we're notorious for having to water everything. Water, water, water. Well, the truth is that citrus trees don't, there's a saying, they don't like their feet wet. So I'm like, this couldn't possibly be. I'm not watering it that much. But I decide I'm going to cut back on my watering. In fact, on all my trees, I cut it back. And the tree sprung back to life. I was watering too much. And actually, it was too often. And when I cut it back, the tree was telling me, I'm not healthy, I'm not happy. And so that receiving that feedback, I was a dysfunctional one by... I was watering too much. So when I cut back, I received that feedback that it wasn't iron. What else could it be? It was water.
There you go. So now that moves us into the next
one, which I'll read.
You're going to read? I can read it.
I don't know.
And value renewables. Reduce dependency on scarce resources.
All right.
So Paul did it by accepting feedback and get it going internal and working through some processes through his dysfunctional behaviors. He reduced his use of water.
And everyone benefited. We think we have to go and buy all the stuff at the grocery store everything is sold in big quantities. And the truth is, I don't, what, you know, the statistic, but like, I think 50% of all food goes to waste.
Wow.
I mean, it's ridiculous. But when people buy all the stuff, and I'm definitely one in that realm. But so don't always buy into what commercialism is telling you. And when you're growing out there in nature, you're going to have abundance. And that's why built into this whole system is this return to surplus, because you're going to have an abundance that you need to share.
Well, and that, yeah, you're using value, you know, using the resources, trying to use things that renewable. And these principles, this, like I like to say this again, or think about this. This is a thought process. I don't get all those things done all the time, all those 12, satisfy all the three ethics all the time. We're starting on the path. We're walking along. We're looking at these. We're learning about them. We're learning about how they apply to the decisions we make in life and how we interact with nature and with the concrete jungle and whatever it may be, and the things you buy on iTunes and stuff like that, the apps you buy, whatever. Use and value renewables. So choosing whether or not you use a lot of plastic, or is that plastic recyclable, not recyclable? Do you have to have that one thing, or can another thing satisfy you that you know can be renewable or be reused? So
well, it's related to the very next one, which is produce no waste. So back to the plastic thing.
That's a high one, right?
You know,
there.
You can't go to the store without using. I mean, you're gonna have some waste. You're gonna have things that, you know, the packaging or whatever. Now, can you repurpose those things? So if it's a paper product, you could totally put it into a worm bin. You could, if it's plastic, maybe you could have little seed trays out of it.
And I like to get everybody into looking at a book. It's called Cradle to Cradle. If you've never read it, it's a beautiful book about a lot about plastic in a way, but because what you can do with plastic and some plastics are infinitely recyclable. They can continually be reused, and they don't downcycle, is what they call it. They can stay at a certain grade and keep at that molecular structure and be used for the same thing over and over again. It's a process they're working on. They need to get all the big chemical companies kind of together on the same page on what they all throw in all these plastics. But it is possible, and there is a way to use plastic and have it not be a waste. And producing no waste is, you know, that principle is there to think about and to kind of, you know, reflect on and, you know, do I have to have that one today? Or can I not, can I go a little bit longer without whatever it is? So,
well, the other thing is that, you know, we kind of mentioned this before, not in this episode, but the stacking of functions. So when you produce no waste, you might have a byproduct. So you have something like, let's say you're growing anything, really.
Right.
You know, sunflowers, let's say. And then you have the stock that's left over. You could, you know, put that back into the compost bin. You can maybe, I don't know what, but there's just.
Well, that's what we talked about before. I didn't really think about it yet until you said that. But when you think about producing no waste and some of your grass clippings that usually go in a green waste bin, maybe, and get put out the front of the street, how can, and even though they're going to take those off and turn them into compost, well, how can you just not put them outside? And some people don't have green waste, and a lot of the clippings and things go right into the trash can. So how can you take some of those and start thinking about, oh, how can they be reused, and how can they, what was waste, how can that be not waste anymore? Well, when we move into the next principle, design from pattern to detail, observe natural social patterns and apply them to design.
Yes, and you notice a little picture of the spider on the spider web. You know, the spider builds this intricate web to catch its dinner. And so when you're in permaculture, we always look at the patterns of nature. And, you know, Joey is a wilderness survivalist. You know, he's had a lot of experience with that. And if you're looking at patterns of nature, you can say, well, okay, we know that there's four seasons. And when there's snow, usually there's no leaves on the deciduous trees. So, like, here where we live, there's a wonderful spot which is completely energy efficient because in the winter when there's no leaves, the sun comes through and it heats the house. But in the summer, there's leaves on the trees, which makes a beautiful shade area for people to sit under. It cools the house. And just looking at that one pattern of the weather and of the cycles of the trees, it's something that has helped the energy consumption for the house.
Definitely hit that nail on the head. What about social patterns?
Social patterns.
I mean, that's interesting. And I mean, a social pattern, well, I think how people communicate or how people interact could be a pattern. And what people like to congregate, that's a pattern for sure. People like to hang out and talk. So if you could create, understanding those patterns and creating a place where, how you can apply that to a design would be, if you make the lettuce bed became a people like to sit and talk. Like I said, the lettuce bed was just there to be lettuce, to grow lettuce. And then one of my friends said, oh, and then we made a shade structure out of bamboo and palm fronds and stuff to shade the lettuce. So when we get so hot and it won't bolt so soon, these types of things. And, when we had finished it, it was like maybe 1 o'clock. So a little bit after high noon. So it was pretty hot outside of the shade structure. And we said, well, it's pretty nice in here. And then my friend said, oh, I've got some chair. We've got chairs here on the farm that nobody's using anymore, 'cause we don't go to this one area. We brought all those chairs up to underneath the shade area. So then now that pattern of what we like to do as people got integrated into the garden design. And you can do that from the beginning, but recognizing some of the patterns of social behavior, even in communication, whether even like this Blog Talk Radio is a recognizing a social pattern that we have, and we're putting that into this design of our lives, Paul and I. We're designing our lives and living. So I hope that's one I'm going to think about more. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, and in future episodes, we'll probably look at each one of these in more detail. But, I mean, today, there's just, you can't talk about all 12 and, you know, go into great depth. But so anyway, the next one's called Integrate. Capitalize on how things work together. So,
well, yeah, that's kind of what we did, didn't we?
Offhand, I'm thinking of the Three Sisters Garden, where you have the corn stalk. This is a Native American technique of growing food, where you have the corn stalk that grows high, and then right below it, you grow pole beans. And the pole beans need a support structure, so it grows up the corn. But at the same time, it is the nitrogen fixer, and it takes the atmospheric nitrogen and it puts it into the soil. And because the corn is, I think it's considered a heavy feeder of nutrients, and the beans put the nitrogen back into the soil. And then they also, the third sister are the, not cabbages, but the, what do you call them? Oh, pumpkins and squashes, because they have huge leaves, and those leaves cool the soil because they protect the soil from the sun. And so the three work very well together. And when you integrate them in a building, this design, it like I said, it capitalizes on how they work together.
Okay, I like it. Now, since we were on that other principle and it said social patterns, now I'm all thinking about people more than garden stuff and food forestry and things so much. Now I'm getting a little, I'm thinking of about life here on this farm, on Tipiwana Farm, and how now we have 11 people living together. Well, 5 in my immediate family, 4 in another family, 1 and 2 single people. And on top of chickens and animals. But let's just talk about the human animal. They're, we are integrating together. And we are all capitalizing on how we all work together. Whatever Paul says, tells me to do, I just do. So,
because he's smart. Joey's very smart. He knows that he should do what I tell him to do.
See? So the real point is that we're all, there's 11 people living. Now, we don't live all under one roof. We have our own little roofs, which I think is very helpful. But we're integrating our skills and our strong points, and we're filling our niches. And even the children are working together in that fashion. One helps the other. The other helps the other. If one is fighting with the other, then they have another one to go play, hang out with. So
it's really, really beginning to work out, because like my strengths are not being in the sun and the heat, working in the dirt, because I have a medical condition which makes it very difficult. But I have other skills like computer skills and organizational type stuff, which help other people who need that kind of stuff. They don't have time to do it or whatever. So I think we're each finding our little niche, and I think I'm having a great time. It's really coming together.
Yeah, and the big thing that we're working on is communication.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting, when you're doing it, it worked. It definitely helps things work helps us all work together, and recognizing, observing everybody's strengths and weaknesses and understanding them. You can apply the 12 principles even now that I'm, yes, you can apply.
What he's saying is, we're talking about integration. If you go back one step and then you go back another, you know, you can say, well, we don't want to waste anyone's skills. So
right.
If you put Paul out in the field, you're probably wasting his skills. Or if you go back, you know, first observe and interact, you know, there's all, you could get a yield. Like if you put Paul out in the field in the heat,
right?
Are you getting the best yield for what you're trying to get? No, it's probably better to give Paul a job that you don't want to do, because that maybe he's good at.
Well, if I sit and try to design a website, oh my gosh, that would be like Paul trying to go out and dig a big giant hole for a tree in the hot sun.
Right.
Now, I've seen him dig a hole for a tree, but
yeah, it makes it sound like I do nothing around here. But when it's cool, I can definitely be out.
Yeah,
it's just the heat I don't do well with.
But it's observing and making sure we're getting valuable results and not not making people uncomfortable. You know, and for making them feel like they've got to do things that they can't do or they would rather not do or it's not comfortable to do, and respecting that and caring for people. So when you look, I like the little snail.
Well, here's an example of the next one, the snail. It says use small, slow solutions, local resources and responses, manageable scale. Now this is part, Joey, I'm going to go back to this accept feedback. Joey's like, nitrogen fixers. And he went out, and I think he planted 1,000, was it? Or?
Well, there was 700 of one variety.
700 of one variety. And if he was paying attention to this one aspect, what happened with that 700 is that only like, what, how many? 12?
No, more than 12. But he's right. What happened was I didn't observe the edge, and the rabbits came in and murdered.
He was planning food for the rabbits, but that wasn't his intention. If he had gone a little bit slower and observed what was happening.
If I would have listened a bit more, I listened to Jeff Lawton all the time, and I went to Australia and actually hung out with him and took classes there and worked on his farm. But one of the major things is how to control your edge. So that would be a small, in the scope of what you're going to do, usually inside of that edge is it's small in comparison. So being mindful and observing the edge and work in controlling that edge first before you go inside it's a small step, may seem large, but actually what you're going to do inside of that edge, it can be quite wild and interesting. So I definitely didn't go very slow because maybe that's one of my dysfunctional behaviors.
Well, I mean, you have a passion, and that passion.
I got really excited.
And there's nothing wrong with doing what you did because it's a test. And if you don't test, you don't learn.
Well, I can tell you out of 700, so think about this, though, which is interesting when you're looking and observing and obtaining a yield and catching and storing energy and stuff. Now, we expend a lot of energy to plant all those little guys. But the ones that did survive, why didn't the rabbits ate a bajillion of them? Why did they not eat the ones that are there? Well, now that after watching the what happened, we will be taking the seeds from those acacias that did survive, and we will be obtaining a yield from those acacias, because those will be the genetics that get passed on for our permaculture nursery.
So Joey's making an assumption that the rabbits didn't like those trees, but something that he might not be observing is that maybe those trees got too big, like they weren't tasty anymore after a certain time. So
they grew faster?
Maybe they grew, maybe they were young and tender. They were delicious. They didn't have time to eat them all. But we'll learn. I mean, next season.
We'll see. I'm trying to look at it in a very positive light.
But that's one of the inputs you look at. Is it because of the genetics of those nitrogen fixers that...
It was local, though, at least. They were local resources that I asked the propagator that propagates all sorts of things next door to propagate them. And we got the seeds from a place I was working at from a different acacias. But it was, and I did it on a manageable scale.
Yeah, that part, I think, let's talk about manageable scale. Because at our farm here, we've got a lot going on. And we had a meeting last night.
That's true.
And we talked about adding a lot of new things. Like one of them was chickens. And the question was, how many chickens? And if you don't have a lot of people, you know, you're going to have, it takes work.
Yeah, well, and that was the idea of manageable scale. And we said, how many chickens? Well, I decided to say, let's control the amount of chickens by, can we feed the chickens from food we grow on site for them,
right,
and let that control the size of the flock. If we can't feed chickens with the food we grow here or create through mealworms, soldier fly larvae, all the different ways you can grow them food and stuff like that, greens and just kitchen waste and stuff like that, then there's no more chickens. So now it's manageable. Because buying more feed is just not the permaculture way in the end. You just got to have it on site so it's as local as possible. So that controlled that one.
Yeah. We're going to see, you know, but as you add something, is it going to add burden to your system? Is it going to actually deplete resources within your system? So if you have chickens and now you have to devote, you know, an acre of ground to grow feed for the chickens, is that worth it within your design? Because is that going to take resources away from your family food?
So see, you can use this almost as those mind maps in a way too. You can draw all sorts of lines from the different principles here and really come up with, I mean, it's a real good way to increase the amount of ways you think about whether they be elements or decisions. And now use and value diversity. Diversity leads to greater resilience.
Well, absolutely. So like in monocropping, you have, you're only growing corn. That really is not good. I mean, it attracts certain pests and gets, you know, other beneficial insects are not attracted. And so when you can build in diversity into your system, you'll attract all kinds of beneficial insects. And it also, you can have food all year round. So rather than just having corn once a year, if all you grew was corn and that you had to survive on that, for one thing, life would be pretty dull. But if you're growing a very...
Popcorn.
Well,
corn on the cob.
Yeah.
What else?
High fructose corn syrup.
There you go.
So instead of growing just corn, you grow everything. Beans and squash and tomatoes and onions and blah, 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 blah. Then, and like apples, if you have different types of apples, some that are early apples, mid-season apples, late apples, that diversity is going to help you
extend the picking.
Everything, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's talking about greater resilience, which is giving you a upper hand on life, really.
Well, and I think, and so now that I'm, like I said, back to when I was looking at the social patterns that started making me think more about people, use and value diversity. Well, here on the farm, we're putting in a lot of different species of nitrogen fixers, a lot of different species of trees, fruit trees, vegetables. We're going to be working on main crop areas, doing some experiments. But what about, well, we've got the 11 people that are living here on the farm now. We've got some diversity going on. We've got a big age range, all the way from more of a matriarch and a patriarch, and all the way down to a three-year-old, and then young.
She's four.
No, Havana.
Oh, Havana's
three.
You're right.
Yeah.
Havana. I thought we were talking about Moon.
No.
Yes, Joey.
That's right. So you got all these different age ranges.
And we have musicians, and we have artists, and we've got all kinds of, you know, different.
Yeah.
Like
healers, and so it's we got little soccer or like little sports people and little the new video that we put up on the YouTube channel of the tarantula, we got little girls that like to hold tarantulas.
That's fun.
But so in value, I'm thinking about people is under, you know, you're valuing They're different.
Well, I like to say it this way.
Say it that.
If we were all the same, we would know each other's jokes.
Oh.
That wouldn't be funny, would it?
No, we wouldn't be laughing.
No. So here's the one that Joey likes, because he was talking about it earlier. Use the edges.
Well, wait. I just want to apply the greater resilience to the diversity of humans, too.
Because right.
We talked about with the corn and with the bugs and stuff, with people, there's a resilience in here on the farm or even out in the greater community. Somebody's not feeling good. There's somebody else to eat. Whether it's you're feeling good because you're depressed, or you're not feeling good because you're depressed, or you're not feeling good because you're sick. And then like my wife's very into herbology and herbs, and so when somebody else is not feeling good, she knows some of the different herbs to use and help that person on the farm here. Got to go off and go see the doctor. So there's a resilience there. If you couldn't get to the doctor one day or you couldn't do anything, we have some solutions. We have some help here on site, and that makes it very local.
Well, another thing, we had 40 people here on Monday for a lecture, and it was incredible, the diversity there. And we have a lot of people come in from the community who have a lot of skills and interests, and they ask questions which help us to think outside of what we're doing. You know, they kind of not challenge us, but like help us to understand why we're doing things. And I think it brings a lot of, it makes us stronger. And people come and volunteer, come and help. And we have resources just by being community oriented. When people come in, you know, it helps us to be, I don't know, it's just great. I have nothing but good things to say about it.
Well, and when you value diversity, and you start to accept, I think you can accept feedback maybe a little bit better. That, so if we move to edges, use edges, value the marginal, important things happen at the intersections. Huh. Well, I mean, that, because I now when I start thinking about that, it's like.
Well, aren't the edges the transitional zones?
Yeah. I mean, they are. There's a. Edges, well, in the one forest idea of edges in like oak savannas, there's an oak, there's a forest, and it moves into a meadow. Or it moves into a shrub later, and then it moves into a meadowy type of situation. Well, right at those edges, there's a lot of activity because things that live in the grass but don't live in the forest go up to the edge of the forest where the grass is or where the bushes are. And then the things that live in the forest come out to the edge of the forest, kind of, and come out to the grass a little bit and then run back in the forest. So at that edge, all those different things are intermingling, and even plants, you know, they'll try to move out of their areas.
Well, I think they say there's the most diversity at the edge.
Right.
In the forest, you have typical, you know, certain type of tree predominates, and then, but at the edges, you have not only the tree on the close to the edge, but then you've got these, you know, vines and other things which have more light, and
yeah,
you know, so
The sun. I mean, like the reefs.
Yeah, more sun
at the edge of the reefs at the edge of the ocean meets the sand.
And like Sepp Holzer, I think his main thing, he talks about, you know, you want as many edges as possible. You're constantly creating like terracing and, you know, different types of,
well, that
surfaces. You're creating diverse climates.
Well, the herb spiral is a good example.
Yeah.
Of some of that, taking the edges and then actually putting them into a three-dimensional kind of situation, and then changing climate and water and sun. When you value the marginal, I think you start to look at some of the plants that don't seem to be very important.
Like weeds.
Haha. Yeah.
People think weeds are a bad thing, but they're really not.
No, they're doing their job.
The weeds can teach you what's going on with your land. If you're observing and you interact with them, you could see, well, what is this weed? If you don't know what it is, you could pull it out and say, look at the roots. What is the root system like? And that can tell you, is it trying to break up the soil, maybe a very hard soil, or is it loose soil? If it's got a web-type root structure, it's trying to hold that soil together. And so weeds are very good in your system, actually.
What about edge thinking? Human relationships, or like how people interact.
Well, I tell this story often. There's a restaurant that I would go to, and all the customers are kind of interact with each other. They talk to each other. They don't know each other, but sometimes they've seen each other. And anyway, I go often, and I saw this one gal, and she was always kind of on the margin. She's marginal and not really interacting. She wanted to, but I think it gives an opportunity for the community. You know, when you see someone that you can tell they want to be part of the action, they want to learn all that, but they might not have the skills, the social skills to stand forward. It could be an opportunity to help build community by reaching out and saying, hey, you know, you want to come and help us? Or, you know, like I'm looking at produce no waste and use the value of renewables and these resources and things. I'm sure this person had a skill that could be used, and she wanted to participate. She just didn't know how to participate because she was shy. And maybe that's where a social leader, someone who's outgoing, could look around and say, oh, well, here's someone. They're here for some reason.
And they may be out on the edges.
Yeah.
But
it's where it intersects. So you can say, look, this person's here for a reason, and let's identify why that's here. So why are the weeds here? Or why is this person here that's not really a leader? They're not, you know, they're interested, but we just haven't identified yet the purpose. And I think it's just an opportunity to, again, observe and interact with the person to see what their interests are. Because, like, my point in all this permaculture bit is that there is a purpose for everyone here. Not everyone can hold the shovel. If we all had the shovel, then you know, we wouldn't get much done. One shovel's for one person. Two shovels, you can have two people. But you know, some people are good about harvesting the food. Other people are good about cooking the food. Some people are good about leading an event, and other people are good about promoting an event. So it's just a matter of using those skills and the you know, this people, the dimension. It's interesting you keep going back to that, because I am the people guy. I love the people aspect of it. I love the earth part and all that too, but that's where I resonate, is the people part. I want to make sure everyone's having a good time. That's why we talk about permaculture fun.
Well, maybe it has to do with David Holmgren, the way he wrote up these principles. And I've looked at him and kind of studied him, but not this. That's what this radio show does a lot of time for me personally, is I get, because I'm talking to all you out there and talking with Paul at the same time, and I'm actually thinking about all of you out there and all of us together more than when I'm just here on the farm planting trees and talking to people about the food forest and how we have a 30-year-old one, a 2-year-old one, a 1-year-old one, and gray water drains and water and plants and animals and things. But here I'm talking without any of the nature, like, in my hands or explaining it directly. I'm explaining it to our minds. And it's very people orientated at this point. And now David was very people orientated and introspective, because he went off and formed a community after he was worked with Bill and they were done. He went off and formed an eco type community. And he's very political and working on those levels and very people orientated, and I'm seeing that come out more now that I'm more in this people space, I feel like, because of all of you out there and Paul with me and us engaging in these direct conversations.
Well, I notice this in you, because when he's out there in nature, Joey's like in heaven, and he's just, you know, this is what it's all about. It's the science, you know, it's totally about. Well, I don't think you're always thinking about people when you're out there.
Well, no, I'm thinking about soil and soil biology and how that supports people, and how if we get this all right and we take care of the earth like this and understand the different systems and stuff, then we take care of the people. But then here,
well, and I think it might be partially because of me, because that I'm always thinking about the people.
Well,
that's my favorite part. And so, you know, maybe we're learning from each other, perhaps. And,
well,
and this
that
is
not perhaps, for sure.
Yeah.
It's definitive. It is. And this is even taking it to the next level for me, because now I'm going to sit and I'm going to ponder this edge and not how it applies to all the edges I've created in these forest systems, but how we create edges within our human, within those social, like applying the social patterns and the different things like that. And actually taking all of these 12 principles and trying to take my mind out a bit from how I apply it on the farm and the house and the sun and where the rain falls and where the water goes and the levels of the contours and the swales and the leaves and the compost and the mulch. And, oh, wait, people.
Well, I have an example.
Give it to me.
All right. Coming up twice a month, we're going to be having these farm
Tour Fridays.
Farm Tour Fridays. And the first part of the tour is going to be Joey taking people out into nature. So the first permaculture ethic is the care of the earth. He's going to go out and show them the earth and everything that he's building here on the farm. And then the second part of this event is going to be a potluck, care for people. So this is where because the first part, there's some interaction with the people, but it's mostly Joey just talking and showing them the earth and showing them what's going on in the systems that we're creating here. And this is funny because we didn't really think about this. But
right.
When we came up with this farm tour last night, we said, well, then we will have a potluck. So that's just a natural. Now everyone's going to come together and meet each other and socialize
and eat.
And then the next part is we're going to come back together and now learn in a more specific knowledge. Each time we'll have a different presentation.
And
I think that building beforehand, that coming together and socializing is going to help us have a common experience. So it's like a body of, we'll feel better and we'll learn more because we've connected to the earth, we've connected to each other. And now when we're going to have this common experience, we feel like, wow, we're in this together. We're building community.
Right, and now we're going to try to have an intellectual communication where we're going to try to communicate what the image is in our mind, not just pointing to trees and explaining it.
And I think it'll help this margin part, because those people who might be shy naturally, if they don't know anybody, they're not going to say a word. But because we've had this opportunity to come together with the potluck, now when it comes time to the classroom, they might actually have a little bit more courage to speak up and to ask questions, and they might feel like, wow, okay, we're all together. It's really neat.
It's super neat, because look at now we're at the top.
Yeah.
And look what it is. Creatively you can respond to change. Envision possibilities in intervene in effective ways.
Yeah.
So the change, but just in me responding to the change in being on the show and talking to everybody and all of you, the possibilities now for me to look at these 12 principles in a whole other way. It's almost like when you look at the three ethics inside of it, how do you look when you say care for the earth? How does the principles apply to care for the earth? Now when I look at care for the people, humans, how does the 12 principles work with people? And then fair share, how does the fair share work with the 12 principles? And now it's just beautiful that we're at the top and we're going to creatively use like the potluck, the Farm Tour Friday. That, see, this is what I'm trying to envision and trying to articulate is that when you start to work with permaculture and work with the 3X, and it's a design. You start to design your mind in a new way of thinking. And now we could have said, okay, Paul and I could have had a meeting and said, all right, let's take the 3 ethics and come up with something to do on Friday. Or I don't know, but when you start designing and you start practicing design and you start practicing the ethics, you start practicing principles, you start observing everything, you naturally start growing. Like everything grows, we do too. Our minds grow, our souls grow, everything grows. Everything gardens. Bill Mollison, is one of his Mollison principles is everything gardens. And it's an interesting concept because we grow. Ideally, we grow and we start to apply these things, and now we just grew. Well, at least I did.
Yeah, and as we said last episode, the whole point of all this is just to build an awareness so that when you're designing your project, your land and all this, first keep the 3 permaculture ethics in mind, care for the earth, care for people, return to the surplus, or use your fair share. And then as you actually start to have a project, you know, okay, I need to resolve this water issue. What am I going to do about the water? Well, okay, now you can... These are practical steps you can use to, before you actually do something, look through each of these things, and then you can make your plan and do it. And it'll naturally come to you over time, and you'll build this awareness, and it's really cool. Well, we're kind of out of time. We can keep talking, but...
But look, we already got to the 12th one.
We did.
Wow.
And we'll talk more about these in another episode. Joey, people can find you at fruittreeforest.com. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Well, we also had this meeting last night.
Oh, right.
Joey has another website, which was his first one, called Dirty Permies, PERMIES.com, dirtypermies.com, because Joey is a hands-on permaculturalist. He's not just all talk. He's not a bookworm and all that. He does it. He puts these principles into practice. So we kind of discussed it, and we want Dirty Permies is going to be like the science of, the YouTube videos, and it's going to be the science of permaculture. What he's actually doing on the farm, nitrogen fixers and things like that. And then Fruit Tree Forest is going to be about food production. So, planting seeds and growing food and harvesting and things like that. So please visit both websites. Go to YouTube. And what are those?
YouTube is Dirty Permi.
Dirty Permi, M-I-E.
Uh-huh.
And
then the other YouTube channel, which doesn't have any videos yet because this is all...
Yeah, we just talked about last night.
But Fruit Tree Forest... And then, that's where we're working on that. And so I'm excited because it just keeps moving forward in this very nice and patterned way. I'm feeling quite secure. So.
And if you have any future topics for us or any questions, if you can email me at asktallpaul@gmail.com, I'd love to hear your questions. Also, we'd love to have you call in. We have a lot of listeners. We know people are listening, but we haven't really had any callers come in, and we'd love to have that. For some future episodes, I'm very interested in having women leaders who are permaculturalists on the show. So if you are a women leader out in your area, please email me at asktallpaul@gmail.com. We'd love to have you on the show and hear your perspective, to hear what you're doing. And, we'll do that. So for now, we'll say goodnight, and we'll talk to you next time. Anything else, Joey?
Good night. I apologize for the audio problems, but I hope you all have a good one, and have some permaculture fun out there.
Yeah. All right.
Bye.